we are a bunch of entrepreneurs and we want to create an enabling ecosystem, as it's called, for more entrepreneurs to emerge and flourish in Oroville. And we don't just see entrepreneurs as commercially minded people, but also people who want to make a change, you know, develop a new service. Entrepreneurs are people that see opportunities rather than challenges and want to take up arms and act and be creative about developing this city and all it needs. So that's why we thought it's good to have a lab where we study what does that actually mean in an Oroville context, hence also the integrality of it all. I run a social entrepreneurship incubator, and basically what social entrepreneurship is, it's about challenging social problems in society using the means of entrepreneurship. And in Oroville, we want to go one step further, where it's not just social entrepreneurship, but it's integral entrepreneurship, and means that we're not just changing the world out there, but also changing the world in here. And we believe that the two are related. So that is about the Integral Entrepreneurship Lab. We started after the Oroville retreat, which happened a few months ago, March-ish. And a couple of big themes were taken on. One was governance of Oroville, growth of Oroville, education of Oroville, and one was the economy. And within the economy, we have people working on issues like karma yoga. How do you make people more karma yogic? Shifting from a cash to an in-kind economy. And then there's us looking at incubating new ventures, accelerating existing ventures, and creating more, like I said, an ecosystem. So this also includes physical spaces where people can work together. And so after we have this session on marketing, we'll actually go across the street to Oromode, where there's a new co-working space that is offered by Oromode, where people can come and, you know, launch. They'll have a space where they can meet like-minded entrepreneurs and get inspired and co-create. And Torkel is doing something similar with Jeff in here, in CSR. So the flavor of this co-working space is more around product and practical, physical manifestations. And across the street, it's more about ideas and people working on
ideas.
You
also, huh?
You actually operationalize the ideas. So why are we talking about marketing? Because we did one open house session in April. In Verité, hosted by Tanya, and there we asked people, what are your main needs and what are you to offer back to the community of entrepreneurs? And as the top three needs that came out, one was around team and human resources. So last month we did a session around human resource management, and the second was actually about marketing, and the third was around fundraising. So we're planning to do a session like this next month around fundraising, and this month it's the other top three. So marketing and the specific needs that people had, they were roughly, you could split them across in these different buckets. So one is identifying who is my audience, who do I actually want to reach out to with my service, my product, my solution. The next is, how do I present myself, my organization, my mission, what's my message to the world? And
what's the message from the world?
What is the message from the world? I hope it's pizza boxes are on the way.
Okay.
That's
the message.
Exactly. So what is the channel? Is it multimedia, or is it word of mouth, and is it the written word, is it the packaging? So that's how the message reaches the audience. And then finally, what is the carrier of the message? So even if you've decided that I'm going to work on my packaging as a channel, and there's somebody that needs to help you design this, this is, by the way, an awesome clever little bag. which is a famous case study in messaging through packaging, and there's a whole company that just does the materials. So these are the big buckets that we want to go into, and how we generally work in our open houses is through pizza boxes. That is our channel. So at some point in the nearby future, these pizza boxes are going to emerge. Right now, I hope some of my colleagues are collecting them from our office. And what we do is in these pizza boxes, we have tools, practical tools. You know, entrepreneurs are people that like action and doing. So we want to accelerate that and give tools. And what we have cooked up for you today is listed here, but I can introduce that maybe in more detail once the pizza boxes arrive. Before that, we thought of maybe debunking some myths. This was Turkle's idea, so I'm looking at Turkle. Because we were a bit scared, you know, saying, oh, marketing for an Oracle audience. You know, our audience don't like marketing, because marketing is, you know, it's about telling half-baked truths at best. And it's about, you know, putting oil on an already overheated machine of unnecessary needs, or rather wants. So then Mark came up with this idea that we're not talking about conventional marketing, we're talking about intentional marketing. So according to us, conventional marketing is that, you know, it's about growth for the sake of growth, consumption for the sake of consumption, and flogging your product even if, you know, if the audience is not receptive. Whereas intentional marketing is more about, you know, why am I putting my time and energy behind this project? Because I believe in it. So it has meaning to me, which might mean that it has meaning to others. So then my objective of marketing is actually reaching those others. And it's more about mobilizing rather than, you know, frogging. So it's more attracting and pulling rather than push. And we just, before we started, we had this conversation around, I forgot your name.
Samira
from Oracle Radio. We're talking about market, and the market, you know, is not necessarily an evil place. You know? So Samira said that the bazaar is actually, it's a fun place. It's a place where you can go and exchange stories and meet people, and it's the glue in the community. You want to say anything more about that, Torgil?
No, that maybe we'd like to talk a little bit about Oracle as a brand and Unix as a sub-brand.
Okay.
If you would like to end up with a discussion later that we are not using the synergy of being one brand. We all market ourselves and then we add on Oracle. But the Indian audience will see Oracle as one brand. They don't understand this. When they come here, they get a little confused and it's very difficult to find the different units. The total is small as one. And then, you're not using that energy, so that was, we'd like to end the day by discussing how we could, as units, try to work closer together and tap into that potential now of being together instead of trying to be alone.
Yeah, great. So we actually prepared a tool that talks specifically about that. You know, there are plenty of organizations that have what they call a house of brands. So they, you know, they have various products or services, and they all have a name and an identity. And then there's actually a continuum between you have a house of individual brands, or you have, on the other extreme, you have a branded house. So when we get that tool about the mother and daughter brand, you can choose whether you want to have the mother really in the front, so everything is like, you know, under that umbrella, or you want to have the mother somewhere in the back, the mother brand in this case. I just had to think about the pizza boxes because Tonto uses that. You know, Tonto has, I don't know if you've seen on the pizza box this name Tonto, and instead of this registered trademark, they have a little Oracle flower. So it's very subtle and, you know, very much in the back. Whereas other, say for example, Oracle papers, you know, it's the name of the brand is Oracle something, Oracle Papers. So that's an example of, you know, your mother really in the front. So maybe, shall I just introduce these tools, and then by that time hopefully the pizza boxes will get delivered. So this is it, for us it comes under messaging, right? How to put your message across. Do you rely heavily on this umbrella identity that we fall under, or not? Another tool here is the brand key. Anybody has ever worked with a brand key? You can also call it a brand canvas. It's basically the different elements of a brand. So one of them is the core values, you know, what do you stand for? Another is, what is the insight that you have about the value proposition that you're offering and why it clicks, why it makes sense? So an insight that, I'll stay very close to home. So at Unlimited Tamanado, one of the insights that we have is that we support social entrepreneurs. And we realize that most social entrepreneurs start because they're passionate about a social problem and they don't have any background in business. Many of them actually don't like the business. So the insight we had is that they realize, the social entrepreneurs, they need some help with social business tools, but they want to be respected for their passion and they don't want to be seen, you know, treated as stupid just because they don't know how to make an Excel sheet or, you know, they don't know how to make a PowerPoint. So this was an insight for us that, hey, actually if we give this kind of business tools and business training, but with a clear respect for people's ideals and their passion, then, you know, we can offer something that there's a need for that and that it will be valued. So that was an insight behind our brand. The other thing in a brand key is the persona. So if you would make your brand into a living creature, what would it be? You know, is it an octopus or a horse or a tree or a puma? Again, in the tool, we share some of the examples. In coffee, you have this Colombian coffee brand, which always comes with this imaginary farmer, Juan Valdez. He doesn't seem to exist. He doesn't exist, no? Juan Valdez.
It's a stereotype of
like a stereotype, like an archetype. So you immediately resonated, oh, here's this, you know, this campesino with his donkey, and, you know, it's authentic, it's direct from the source. So this is this message that you want to personify in a living being. So that's what we have in store for you when you want to know more about messaging. So the structure of the afternoon is basically that after the introduction, you can split up in groups, and we can explore these subtopics in more detail, and you can come with your need in your organization right now. We have Aurelio, who will be your resource person if you're interested in messaging. We have Dania, who will be your resource person if you're interested in audience. Aurelio, Dania, we have, what was it again? Mark is in terms of materials. And Kais, that's me, if you're interested in channels. So I want to continue my briefing here. What is the audience? This is really about getting into the skin of the people that you're communicating to. And in my background with startups, we like to talk about the lean startup. A lean startup is you invest as little as possible in your product or service until you have validated your assumptions about what you think that you know about your end customer or your end user. Right? This is not just for a commercial audience, this is also for a service. So it's all about really using empathy, getting into the skin of the end user, the end audience, and our tools for that. So for example, Empathy Map, it describes your your, you know, the people that you're trying to communicate to, and you know, what do they hear, what do they think, what do they see, what do they feel, and then you can actually map that. You know, what do they hear, what do they think, what do they see, what do they feel, and you can do it even guided visualization, so you really step into this identity of this person that you're communicating to, and you create their universe. That's the empathy map. I'm just circling them so I remember which one I spoke about. Another tool, anybody heard about human-centered design? Anybody heard about this company called IDEO? Yeah? Now, this famous design company, since design thinking became really en vogue, IDEO took a big leap and they became really famous. And one of the things they did as part of their corporate social responsibility is they launched IDEO.org, where they try and fix all kinds of social issues, whether it's malnutrition or gender exploitation or whatever, trafficking, through design thinking. And they're also very big in the bottom of the pyramid. You know, there was this big famous book by Prahalad about the fortune at the bottom of the pyramid, and suddenly business around the world woke up to the, you know, 4 billion people, you know, who aren't part of the elite, and they figured out, hey, actually we can sell stuff to these people. But these people live very far away in the slums, you know, not where my office is, or in the villages, so suddenly, you know, business needed to listen and actually immerse themselves in these alien cultures. That's where, I mean, it's a little bit cynical approach to this, so I apologize for that, but this is where this human-centered design is actively used and developed more. It's actually a toolkit in itself. If you go to the IDEO.org website, you can download a 35 megabyte PDF with like 70 tools about how to really get a deeper understanding of your end user through all kinds of games, like, you know, role plays, or for example, you can do ranking, you can show them you know, images and photographs. One of the main insights here is try to be conscious of your bias and slow down your optimism or filling in that what you think that you know about, you know, somebody else's reality. And this is really hard, especially if you want to sell something, because you have to first be very convinced yourself about, you know, that it's worth selling. So, you know, it's really threatening to undermine all that confidence and you know, exposing that to people's actual real feedback. And another insight from here, maybe I'll talk a bit more about this value proposition canvas. So the insight is that people, like Dr. House would say, you know, everybody lies. If you ask somebody in a survey, will you buy my product, they all say yes. And when you actually put it on a table and don't allow them to take it unless they pay 10 rupees, then, you know, most people don't take the product. And this is, again, really sad news for many entrepreneurs, because they do a survey and they say, wow, you know, 70% of the population actually says that they will buy my product, so I have a market. And then, you know, unfortunately, when you go and actually charge, you realize that it's not the case.
Hi, so there is, yes, an 80-20 rule.
The 80-20 rule, what's that?
Sorry, well, you get 100% positive response, and you immediately say 80% of it is not
bias.
Just wipe it out, because you'll only get 20.
Right.
It's common, and that is up and down the spectrum of sales and marketing.
You have to choose the right 20%.
Correct. That's knowing your customer.
Yes. Yeah. So here, this is very much the attitude is about testing. You know, in this value proposition canvas, this is it's actually a plug-in to the business model canvas.
Yeah.
So the business model canvas is an open source tool, which is now very popular in startup land. Canvas by a guy called Alex Osterwalder. And a value proposition is like the front end of this business model. And it's all about testing your assumptions, being really clear about what you think that you know, and then testing it. You know, there's no evidence means no information. Okay, so this is the Dania corner of understanding your audience, the Aurelio corner of framing your message, my corner of the channel. So first of all, I have to disappoint anybody who's into internet and social media. We did try to make a tool about how to use social media or when not to use social media. And we used social media to find out when not to use social media. And it was really a Big Brother experience because we couldn't find any information online about when not to use social media. You know, the information we got was when not to use social media. A, when you don't want to be famous, when you don't know what you're saying, you know, when you're stupid, don't use social media. But we're really convinced that there are plenty of cases when not to use social media, but we couldn't find them online. So we didn't make the tool. So maybe apologies for that.
Maybe the tool could be how to use social media.
Yes. Right, yeah, but actually we thought, you know, how to use social media, there's a really good toolkit. It's published by an organization called Buffer. Buffer, anybody uses Buffer? Buffer is, you know, when you don't want to use social media every day, you do it, say, on a Tuesday afternoon when you don't have anything else to do, and then you basically schedule all your posts for the rest of the week, and you buffer it. So then you use Buffer as an app, and then Buffer will. It's maybe not the best tool for doing this. In Facebook, you can do it through Facebook itself. But what they have done is they've given a good overview of, you know, how to use different channels like, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter, etc.
Can you write down where we find this tool or how to find it?
Buffer.com.
I'd be very careful of Buffer. I'm using the product, but I wouldn't. If you want to post social media messages, I wouldn't use Buffer. I wouldn't use anything, actually. It stops you thinking. It stops you working out the appropriate message. I think it's dangerous. Not dangerous. That's too strong. I think it's it has its issues.
So the great thing is that we have Nick. So anybody who has a question around social media, go to Nick.
Yeah, or go online and go on Facebook and look up Cindy. Cindy Dublish.
Cindy, yeah. Cindy was is it with
IE,
CH?
I think it is. IESH.
Really?
I think so.
Okay, SH. Or I. So she was she's a social media guru who came to Orville a couple of times to teach us about mainly Facebook. Like I said, our teaching on social media is not yet ready for consumption. So maybe we can organize a separate session just on social media, because it's quite a large topic. What we do have in our pizza boxes is, as a channel, there's a guy who wrote a book called Rockefeller Habits, one of his tools, one of the habits, was control the ink in the industry, as in this kind of ink. And it basically says that the most effective thing that you can do to spread your message is write a book. Because if you write a book, you are immediately, you know, positioned as a thought leader, because otherwise you wouldn't have written the book. And also a lot of more virtual media likes to have tangible, hard copy media, so people will start writing about you. There's another really good book actually about using the social media cloud. It's called The Gort Cloud. I can't remember who's the author. And The Gort Cloud specifically talks about sustainable business and how they're using G-O-R-T, Gort. Not like a bitter gourd, but a gourd. I actually have no idea what a gourd is, but its cloud is something that you use to spread your message. And this is basically people that resonate with you and your message, and volunteer to become your fan and thereby your ambassador. It's, you know, some of the insights there is that you have to disclose everything and be ruthlessly transparent and honest and authentic, because they'll poke through anything that, you know, has a varnish. But writing a book doesn't mean that you're not using the other channels. It just means that you're standing out above everybody else who didn't write a book. In Orville, I was just doing some research about that. IKEA wrote a book about her work with the sand, sandbox. So I think, you know, that's sets her apart as, you know, like an expert in this field. Priya from Buddha Garden wrote a book about how I made my garden grow. I think Deepika and Bernard also wrote a book about seed saving.
That's a beautiful book. We have made a beautiful coffee table book about selected all the products, which is very, very beautiful, which is actually not being used very much.
He models the book.
Because it's not really a product book, it's a coffee table book about the beauty and how these products are made. And it's very beautiful.
Yeah. Orville Consulting also wrote a book about my pumpkin roof. That's what it's called, no? It's about urban food production, urban gardening.
So we've got the delivery of the pizza. Right?
Way!
It's hot. Tools are hot. Very hot, huh?
Tools, hot from the press. Yeah, beautiful bridge to packaging. We didn't actually put a tool in the box, but that's why I brought this. This is a... this came out when Puma wanted to do something new with their packaging, and it's actually a shoe box. So when you buy a pair of shoes, it has a little piece of cardboard here and a little piece of cardboard in the end. According to what it says here, it uses 65% less paper, and you can use it again and again and again. And by the way, Puma, you know, became like a style icon because it's a fancy little bag and everybody wants to be seen with this bag. They also have the table of periodic table that says, you know, what applies to this particular shoe. You know, does it use recycling? Does it use recycled polypropylene? Is it good for multiple use, etc., etc.? So what they basically did is they used their packaging for many more purposes than just packing a product. And here we have a beautiful example where you could actually use all of this for, you know, when you're printing this box. You can also print this side of the box. Right now, Tania is not using it. So what we are thinking of, you know, when we're talking about packaging is, you know, what more can you do with your package than packing the stuff that is inside? So can you use your packaging as a channel for your message? Then finally,
the Puma bag was also considerably cheaper, by the way.
Right.
They don't only save 60% in materials; they save 60% in cost.
Yeah. So that makes
so that's a no
conventional
brainer
business sense as well.
Yeah, no brainer.
So finally, around material, what we have in the box for you is using humor. So this was Torquil's idea when we were thinking about materials. You can think about text and images. So when you look at images, then we'll talk to Vimal. When you talk about text, then you know, there are some do's and don'ts about using humor. Especially, I think Orville is an interesting context because we've got such a multicultural audience that, you know, you will always upset somebody or the other when you're trying to be funny. and then finally, and then it's really time to break up in groups, is when you work with graphic professionals. We tried in our incubator to train our startups how to properly brief your graphic professional. You know, first mistake is trying to do it yourself. So once you've learned not to make that mistake, then you use, you know, somebody who actually knows how to do it. But then you have to tell them what to do and what not to do and when to do it. And so we have some do's and don'ts on that. This is my presentation about the pizza boxes. It was a bit long because I was dragging it so that the pizza boxes would actually arrive.